apps can do a lot of cool things. You could order dinner, gamble on your favorite team, and track your health. You could even get a mortgage. One click and you can be approved. I'm not sure by who or what country they're in. You deserve more from the mortgage industry. At AnnieMack Home Mortgage, we believe in the need for live human interaction during a very complex process. The kind of service and guidance which an app simply can't provide. Our customers are more than credit scores and income documents. They're individuals and families who live in and strengthen our communities. Their story is our story, and that story begins in a home. Chris Sawyer is an expert on providing superior customer service and in meeting the mortgage needs of current and future home buyers. With over 18 years of experience in the industry, Chris is able to help customers migrate through the home buying and home financing process by using his wealth of knowledge as a well-qualified mortgage professional. And best of all, Chris is located in Cromwell, Connecticut, where he has helped hundreds of clients in Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island make their dreams of home ownership a reality. Visit chrissawyer.annie-mac.com. Email him at csawyer@annie-mac.com or give him a call, 860-878-8730.
Chris Sawyer, NMLS number 39345, corporate NMLS number 338923, AnnieMack Home Mortgage and Equal Housing Lender, American Neighborhood Mortgage Acceptance Company, LLC, DBA, AnnieMack Home Mortgage, Lo-Fi Direct, Connecticut First Mortgage Correspondent, License Lender, Broker Number ML338923, Massachusetts Mortgage Lender and Mortgage Broker License Number MC338923, Rhode Island License Lender, License Number 20112810L. Call for additional details.
Jones on first down, wide open, it's Barkley, and Saquon Barkley will take it into the end zone.
Your best ability is availability. Saquon Barkley, he's great when he's on the field, but the problem is, since 2018, he hasn't been healthy for this team.
Look at this. They lob it to him. He taps it in off the glass. How about that?
Hoden Mosier, I think right now, is the best coach of college basketball, hands down.
Fins, 2 for 3. He's done his part.
Pitch is drilled to deep right field toward the pole, and it is gone.
They don't mind not being what they were in the 90s as the best organization in baseball, because the Yankees are not. They're even close to the best organization in baseball.
They're trying to be the Rays, and the Rays do this for a reason. Like, you're the Yankees.
Welcome to Sports Talk with RJ. I am Steve Risser, along here with Justin D'Onofrio. And franchise tag deadline day has come and gone, and no surprise to anyone, the Giants and Barkley does not get tagged by the Giants, and this was no surprise to me. I mean, I had a feeling that he was not going to get the franchise tag, but the thing is now is I think there's a very good chance that Barkley's days with the Giants are over. The Giants have tried to re-sign him. The Giants have tried to come up with a long-term deal. They haven't agreed. It looks like Barkley is going to be testing free agency, and it just doesn't look like he's being back with the Giants. I just think this whole thing with him and Joe Shane, I just don't think it's going to work out. I think this is the end of the road for Saquon Barkley, and I think he's going to be with them. There's still a chance he could re-sign with the Giants, but I'm getting the feeling that he is going to be with another team next year.
Giants are kind of letting him go out and letting other teams kind of bid for their rights for Saquon Barkley. And yeah, they, you know, again, I assume they match it if they like the price, but if Saquon comes back, but yeah, if not, you know, I do expect them to go to another team. And, you know, cause especially if it's a team that's, you know, you throw out there like an Eagles, a Cowboys, you know, a team that has kind of Super Bowl aspirations, you know, in the Giants right now. You know, I know right now it sounds like Daniel Jones will be the starter, but, you know, think Giants. So, like, maybe Barkley decides that he wants to go play with somebody that's got a chance to win a Super Bowl next year. So, it's no secret Saquon's been Giants' best offensive player the last couple of years. But, kind of felt like it kind of seems like his days with the Giants are numbered.
Yeah, and there's the only optimism you have as a Giants fan that he might be back is that he won't get a huge deal in the open market. A lot of teams are realizing, yes, this guy's a good player, but he's not as good as Christian McCaffrey. Let's be honest. He's not as good as Christian McCaffrey. He's still one of the – I still think he's one of the top running backs in the league, but he's not the best running back in the league. And the thing is he's missed a lot of time. He misses time. He's really had two great years since he's been with the Giants, his rookie year in 2018 and then in 2022. So he's really had two great years with the Giants. I mean, year two, he was banged up in year two. He missed most of year three. Year four, he was banged up. He was banged up for a lot of year four as well. And then last year, he was banged up, and he didn't have as good of a year as he had in 2022. So he gets banged up a lot. and he's a good running back. He's like, there's a lot of huge runs, but he has issues running between the tackles. The only hope Giants fans have for him to come back is that he's not going to get as good of a deal on the open market. But there is our teams out there like the Houston Texans that have a lot of cap space that could very easily give him, you know, 13, 14 million a year.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that happening. Yeah, with the Texans, yeah, they got cap space, and you know, team that competed right away last year, and team that's got aspirations to win their division again. So yeah, absolutely. You know, we've talked about the running back market maybe not being, you know, a lot of these teams rather draft somebody late, have them kind of start, and then, you know, for the first couple of years, and then they are up to get a big contract, you know, get rid of them and just kind of reset the cycle. So yeah, maybe there's teams out there that won't give him what he wants. But yeah, there's always that one team that's desperate enough to go out and has the money that would make a deal like this and go sign Barkley and go give him what he wants to improve their team. So I could absolutely see it, but and it only takes one.
Yeah. And the thing is, you said it, he's probably going to, if he doesn't resign with the Giants, and he's probably, there's a good chance he won't, he's going to go to a team like, you know, like a Houston, like maybe the Cowboys, maybe even an Eagles, a team that needs that running back to get over the hump. Not a team that's rebuilding, a team that needs that running back to get over the hump to get to a Super Bowl. That's the team that he's going to resign with. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. But the big question too is which team is the best fit? And I think it's a pretty obvious fit. I've talked about the team. We talked about it last week. It's the Houston Texans. CJ Stroud had a great rookie year. They didn't run the ball that well last year. This would be a really, really good fit. This could be the piece for them to get them over the hump against a Baltimore, get them over the hump even against a Kansas City or a Buffalo, to get them over the hump against those top teams in the AFC, because they're probably going to have one of the top five quarterbacks in the game for the next 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, I'm with you with the Texans. They got about $70 million in cap space this offseason. They're playing a very winnable division. And yeah, you mentioned it with all the other teams in the AFC, you're going to have to put up points, and somebody like Barkley's going to prove your offense, you know, when he's on the field. So, and yeah, Stroud looked awesome in year one. They were way ahead of schedule. And yeah, you had a guy like Saquon Barkley, and now they're trying to get in that mix and now where they could compete in the AFC. And, you know, Barkley definitely helps out their running game because they're in the bottom five last year in rushing offense in a lot of the categories. So, yeah, I think the best fit for Barkley is the Houston Texans.
Yeah, it is. And as a Giants fan, it was tough for me. Would I want him back? Would I not? If I had to make a decision, would I want him back or not want him back? I probably said I would, because it's good. I don't know how they're going to. It's going to be tough to replace his production, but. On the flip side, he's not a guy the Giants, you know, can't lose. The Giants can't afford to lose Saquon Barkley. Like, there's two players the Giants can't afford to lose. They couldn't afford to lose. And they paid them last year with Andrew Thomas and Dexter Lawrence. Those were the two guys they couldn't afford to lose. They could afford to lose Saquon Barkley. Like, say, for example, if Eric Gray is better and they draft somebody in the later rounds and pair those two guys together, that can replace Saquon's production. So, yes, if you had to ask me would I want him back or not, I would want him back. He's a good guy, and I'm not sure how the Giants are going to replace their production yet, but it's not a guy that the Giants have to sign. And let's be honest, it's not Joe Shane's guy. It's Dave Gettleman's guy. And to be honest too, Dave Gettleman made a big mistake. I know Saquon's had a good career with the Giants, but Dave Gettleman made a huge mistake not drafting him. Drafting him and not drafting Josh Allen when they desperately needed a quarterback after the 2017 season.
Yeah, that was a mistake. And you're not, you know, we probably never, you know, unless if there's some world one running back that comes out of college football in the next, you know, 10, 15 years, you're probably never going to see a running back go number two overall
never,
ever again.
Never, never. You just can't do that. You can't take a running back with the number two overall pick. We needed a quarterback. It makes no sense at all. And it's why Dave Gettleman had a terrible run as Giants GM. That was, and for all the mistakes he made, this was his biggest.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, yeah, he's been a nice player. He's been a really good player for you guys. He's been the best player when he's healthy on the field offensively. But yeah, there is a running back late round guy that I'm not saying he's going to be the next Barkley that could fill that need in Dylan Lobby out of New Hampshire. I watched it. I'm a New Hampshire fan, so I watched a ton of them. Good receiving back, quick. He's from Staten Island, so I don't know if he's a Giant or Jet fan, but I would assume he, because I'm hoping the Patriots draft him, but he's a good receiving back. He's like 5'8". He was our leading receiver, and we scored 45 points a game. So there is a late round draft pick that I think, you know, could help out next year for you guys. But yeah, you know, if you know, to spend $12 million on a running back's a lot, you know, nowadays, and Daniel Jones is going to get, you know, has his $40 million on the book still. And, you know, I know you guys are probably trying to sign Xavier McKinney too. That's just going to get a good chunk of money, and he's a safety. So it'll be tough, but it'd be nice to have him, especially if you do draft another quarterback, you know, to replace Jones in the future. You like to have a Barkley there. But if not, yeah, it's, you know, be tough to, you know, it'll be tough to kind of replace, you know, the production that he can do, especially as a receiving back.
Yeah. I mean, he's better running the football than receiving the football, but he could do both. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a loss for the Giants. It's definitely something they're going to have to replace, but it just felt over the last 2 years that Joe Shane and the Giants really didn't want to come up with a long-term deal. It just didn't seem like the two sides could agree. And I just think the two sides are just going to eventually part ways. I just think that's the way it's going to end up going.
Yeah, that's what it seems like, unfortunately. But yeah, you know, it just doesn't seem like, yeah, last offseason it sounded like last year they were way off on trying to find a deal. And yeah, right now it kind of just seems like the Giants are going to let him go out there and see what he can find. And, you know, if the Giants think it's reasonable, they'll probably match it. If not, you know, they'll let them walk.
Exactly. So yesterday, 9 players got tagged. 8 players got the franchise. Not all yesterday, but 8 players ended up getting the franchise tag. 1 got the transition tag. That was Kyle Duggar of the Patriots. The big question, though, is of the 9 guys that were tagged, how many will get a long-term deal done with their teams before opening day of this year? And I think 7 of the 9 guys are going to. I think just because of the positions they play. Like, you look at – because a lot of them are really, really important positions. You got a couple edge rushers with Josh Allen and Brian Burns. I feel like those teams are going to lock those two guys up long-term. You got you got Michael Pittman. I mean, when you got a young quarterback like Anthony Richardson, you want him to have a weapon. And they got Richardson on a rookie deal. I think that the Colts are going to come up with a long-term deal with Michael Pittman. I think that Matt Ibuki from the Ravens, he's going to get a long-term deal. I think Jalen Johnson from the Bears, he's going to get a long-term deal. Antoine Winfield, yes, he plays safety, but I think he's going to get a long-term deal because he's one of the best safeties in the league, and he's their best defensive player. And I do think that Kyle Duggar, I think the Patriots will come to terms with Kyle Duggar, even though he got the transition tag and other teams can negotiate with him. I do think that other teams could give him an offer sheet. I do think that Duggar will be back with the Patriots. There's 2 guys I don't think will be back with their teams, and that's Legarius Sneed and that's T. Higgins. And I said last week that T. Higgins would be back with the Bengals. I don't, from what I've been reading this week, I don't think so. A lot of reports at the combine are that they are going to trade him and they are going to come up with a long-term deal for Ja'Marr Chase. So I think there's 2 guys that get traded. I think T. Higgins now is the most likely guy who's not going to be with this team. I think he's the most likely guy who's going to get traded. And I think that Legarius Sneed, I think it depends on what happens with Chris Jones in the next week. It depends on if they re-sign Chris Jones. If they re-sign Chris Jones, he'll obviously probably get traded. If he doesn't, I think they come up with a long-term deal. I don't think the Chiefs will lose Sneed and Jones, but I don't think both will be back. I think it's going to be either Sneed or Jones being back for the Chiefs. So I don't think any of them are going to play on the franchise tag. I think 7 of those 9 guys are going to get long-term deals, and I think 2 of them get traded.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think 7 of the 9 are gonna remain with their team. I'm with you. Sneed probably is probably going. You know, it's gonna be tough to lock up him and Jones, and you know, maybe they can find something. And T. Higgins, yeah, like it's because T. Higgins is gonna want #1 receiver money, and you know, you're gonna have to lock up Ja'Marr Chase. You know, Joe Burrow you already got, so it's gonna be tough to sign another. You know, T. Higgins been awesome for him, but he can go be #1 in a lot of other spots, and I think, you know, they'll be able to trade him and that team, whoever it is, will be able to sign him. And yeah, I'm hoping the Patriots come to a long-term deal with Kyle Duggar, because I thought he fit that role, filling in for McCourty very well, and he's very versatile. So I would assume Mayo's kind of keeping the same type of stuff from Bill's defense, and I think Kyle Duggar would be very, very valuable, and a guy that's been pretty healthy, and it's been who was a huge part of our defense that really improved and kept us in a ton of games this season when our offense was an absolute was absolute garbage for the entire season.
It definitely was. And yeah, I do think Duggar is a good chance that Duggar, as I said earlier, will be back with the Pats. And I think the big reason why, and I said this earlier, why a lot of these guys are not, like last year, you had a lot of guys playing on the franchise tag, Barkley, Pollard, Jacobs. But what was the biggest reason why? The position they played, they were running backs. Teams aren't giving running backs long-term deals. I just think with a lot of the positions these guys play, the guys that are getting franchised yesterday, they play defensive line, receiver, corner. Those are the positions that are getting – those are positions – they're not getting paid more. Quarterbacks are getting paid, but those are positions that are getting paid in this league. So that's why, yeah, I don't see any of these guys playing on the franchise tag this year.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of these guys, yeah. Yeah, you mentioned like Winfield, but, you know, playing safety. But, yeah, from what I've seen, it sounds like the Bucs are willing to reset the safety market for him. And he's been awesome since coming to the league. So they're willing to pay him what he wants. You know, I know they just locked up Evans, and we'll talk about Baker Mayfield coming up, and they have to resign him. But, yeah, you know, teams aren't willing to, you know, what, there's multiple running backs that could have been on the franchise tag. None of them got it. And, yeah, we talk about Barkley. A lot of these teams just – it's not worth the risk to them. And, you know, when you're paying quarterbacks so much money, you know, you're going to have to reduce money elsewhere. And that's been the running back position mostly. So, yeah, it's been unfortunate for a lot of the running backs, but that's kind of the way the NFL is trending right now. And, you know, something that's probably not going to be changed anytime soon.
Oh, no. It's yeah. And you look at the other position, a lot of these guys that are becoming free agents, but this is inside linebacker. There's some good inside linebackers, Patrick Queen, Levante David. I mean, I don't know Levante David's getting up there in age, but Levante David, Patrick Queen. The Ravens chose – I actually thought Patrick Queen had a better career for the Ravens than Justin Madubuike. I think Madubuike had that 1 year, but it's the position Madubuike plays. Madubuike plays a more impactful position than Patrick Queen. That's why Patrick Queen's going to be a free agent, and Madubuike is going to be Madubuike is got franchised, so, and probably going to come up with a long, and they're probably going to come up with a long term deal for him. So yeah, it all really depends on the position the position you play, and if you're going to get a long term deal, you said it. Running back is just, and we said it earlier with Saquon Barkley, a lot of teams have trouble giving those running backs a long term deal because they just don't stay great for that long of a time. But moving on from the franchise tag deadline to a quarterback that was released, that's going to be released by the Broncos once the league year starts on Wednesday, and actually a week from today, and that is Russell Wilson. He will be released. The Broncos are planning to release Russell Wilson, and I think this was no surprise to anyone because of what happened at the end of last year. I mean, Sean Payton benched him after the Patriot game, and ironically in that game, he brought them back from 23-7 down to tie that game, and the Patriots, his defense couldn't make a stop, couldn't stop Bailey Zappi at the end of the game, and they won. So, no surprise here. But here's the thing, which I don't really get. People are acting like Russell Wilson is some terrible quarterback. I get he's not in his prime anymore. I get he's not as good as he once was. He's not that bad of a quarterback. I mean, he had 26 touchdowns, 8 picks last year. He had the Broncos in a playoff race. The Broncos were playing meaningful football in December last year. They were in a playoff race. I really don't get why people think Russell Wilson is not that good right now. I still think he's a decent quarterback. And if you saw his season last year, I mean, the Broncos won 5 games in a row. He engineered 3 game-winning drives. The Broncos won 5 games in a row. And you want to know who the teams the Broncos beat in that 5 game-winning streak? The Packers, the Chiefs, the Bills. They beat the Vikings and the Browns. They beat four playoff teams in that stretch. When they won 5 in a row. Part of the issues with the Broncos last year were not Russell Wilson. Part of them were on Sean Payton. Sean Payton didn't get along with Russell Wilson. Sean Payton benched Russell Wilson when I think he shouldn't have been benched. Yes, I'm not saying he's a great quarterback anymore, but he's a lot better than people think. And one of these teams is going to get a bargain for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the Broncos got to pay him $39 million. So like he could go sign. Or I think it depends how much he signs with another team. Like it, then it, you know, the Broncos got to pay the rest or total up to $39 million or $40 million, something like that. So like, you know, he could sign for a team for $1 million and make the Broncos pay him the other $39 million. So I think it's how it works. So yeah, you could get Russell Wilson pretty cheap. And I wonder, you know, he had a better year last year than he did his first year in Denver. And I wonder if he kind of gets that bad rap the way he goes about it. Like he had his own office. He doesn't.
That definitely is. That definitely is the reason why he gets a bad rap. But on the field, this guy is not a terrible quarterback. He could still play. And people are acting like this guy's completely washed up. He's one of the worst quarterbacks in football. He won 7 games last year, and he won 5 consecutive games. I don't understand why people think, you know, Kirk Cousins, we're going to get to that, but Kirk Cousins is such a better option than him.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, Russell, yeah, he had a better year. I know he's not the same guy than he was at Seattle, but, you know, age is getting up there. He wasn't, you know, like that offense, I thought, yeah, he was improved. I don't like Jerry Jeudy, some of those other wide receivers Denver has. They haven't lived up to what kind of the hype was with them. And I think Baines has done a better job last year with them. He's not the same guy from Seattle, but, you know, he's still, you know, you put him a team that's got a couple of weapons, that's got a decent line, you know, good defense. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he could get a team to the playoffs. Like, you know, I don't think he's, you know, I still think he's got something left in the tank. I don't think he's going to be a great mentor or a leader for a team. But, like, if you don't have a rookie sitting behind him yet, you want Russell to teach him, I think he'd fit very well with the team.
Oh, yeah. And now we'll talk about what team is the best fit for what Russell Wilson. Really, I think the team, it's going to come down. I think about 3 or 4 teams for him. I'm thinking 4 teams. The Steelers, the Vikings, the Falcons. I think Steelers, Vikings, the Steelers. I think 3 teams. The Steelers, the Vikings, or the Falcons. I think it's going to come down to those 3 teams for Russell Wilson. And I think the best fit out of all of them, and it's pretty obvious, it's Pittsburgh. I think they got 2 good receivers. I know their roster's not great, but I think they have the best roster out of those 3 teams. They got two good receivers with Deontay Johnson and George Pickens, good running back in Najee Harris, questionable offensive line, but and a pretty good defense, and a really, really good head coach that I feel like will believe in Russell Wilson more than Sean Payton will. He will not be a head coach that will, you know, want his own guy. I think he will believe in Russell Wilson. I think Mike Tomlin will believe in Russell Wilson. That's why I think Pittsburgh is the best destination for Russell Wilson.
I actually went with the Minnesota Vikings. I think with their offensive talent, you got Justin Jefferson, one of the best, if not the best wide receiver in the sport. Jordan Addison had a really nice year. I know their running game's not great. But you got TJ Hockenson, a really good tight end, one of the better ones in the sport. And because it sounds like Kirk Cousins is probably going to Atlanta, it's kind of seems what the rumor is right now. So, you know, I think with, you know, O'Connell being the head coach there, I think, you know, that's a good guy to have for, you know, a bridge year or two while you're trying to figure out your future quarterback right now, because I don't think that's on the roster right now. So I think Russell Wilson going to a team like Minnesota, it's a good division, but you know, I think the Vikings have a lot of offensive talent. They, you know, defense got better as the season went on last year. So I think the Minnesota Vikings would make the most sense for Wilson.
Yeah. And I did forget to mention the Vikings there. I did forget to mention the Vikings. And yeah, out of those 4 teams, I still think it's the Steelers though. I think the roster and the Vikings, the rosters are close. The Vikings roster, the Falcons roster, I think they're close to the Steelers roster. The Raiders roster, I think, is the worst out of all those teams. And all those rosters are pretty close. But yeah, I just think that the best chance for him to work out is Pittsburgh. Minnesota, yes, with Kevin O'Connell. I get it. But I think the issue with Minnesota is the run game. There isn't really a good run game. I think the defense won't be as good. I know Brian Flores did a good job last year with that defense, but I don't think the defense will be as good because there's a chance they could lose Danielle Hunter. So, yeah, I think it's close, but I'm going to go Steelers. I'm going to go Steelers. I think if Wilson is the quarterback of the Steelers next year, I think they're a playoff team. I think he takes the job from Kenny Pickett, and I think there's a very good chance they return to the playoffs if Russell Wilson's their quarterback next year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they make the playoffs next year. I was reading this morning. It sounds like, though, the Steelers are going to keep it going with Kenny Pickett and run it back with him.
Yeah, but we'll see. I mean, there were rumors last year he was healthy at the end of the year when Mason Rudolph was playing, and they chose to stick with Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, so if that's the case, then yeah, maybe they would go get Russell Wilson, because I know they may be in the mix for the Justin Fields trade as well. But yeah, I think if you put him with Wilson, they got a really good defense. They got a really, Mike Tomlin's is a really good coach, and Arthur Smith as an OC was better than he was at obviously as a head coach. So maybe you get some of the talent out of Deontay Johnson and George Pickens, but we'll see. So yeah, I could see the Steelers being able to get the playoffs next year with Russell Wilson as their quarterback.
Yeah, I agree. I could very, very easily see that happen. Now, seeing that Wilson and Cousins are free agents, the question is, this is just talking about next year. Going into next year, who would you rather have? Would you rather have Kirk Cousins? Or would you rather have Russell Wilson go to next year? For me, it's a lot closer than people think. But I'm going to give the slight edge to Kirk Cousins. And I think the biggest reason why is Russell Wilson has been a diva. Let's be honest. He's been a diva. You saw the teammates. You saw the comments his teammates made in Seattle about him. You saw him having his own office in Denver. You can blame Sean Payton for the issue Wilson contributed to them too, even though he had a better season than he had his first year in Denver. So it's very, very close to me. I don't think you really want either of those guys if you want to compete for a championship. I think both could get you to the playoffs. I think both, there's a good chance with one of those two you can get to the playoffs, but you don't want either to compete for a championship with. But even though Cousins come off a torn Achilles, I'm going to just give Kirk Cousins a slight edge. Not as big of an edge as a lot of people. A lot of people think, oh, he's clearly better than Russell Wilson. I think that's not true. I'll give Cousins the slight edge over Russell Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you as well here with Kirk Cousins. As long as he comes back, healthy, coming off the torn Achilles injury. I a couple years ago, that guy was in the running for MVP. And yeah, the diva part of Russell Wilson, I think, hurts him a lot in this. And I know Kirk Cousins only has one playoff win, but he's put up some big regular season numbers. He's put up three touchdown seasons, three times so far in his career, but in the last couple of years. So, Kirk Cousins is not bringing you to a Super Bowl. But I think, because it sounds like he's going to land on, you could put him around to Kyle Pitts, a Drake London, Bijan Robinson in the backfield. I love that Atlanta team. The NFC South, he takes over that job. So I think Kirk Cousins, I'd rather have him, over Russell Wilson.
Yeah, and I agree. If say Cousins goes to Atlanta, which it looks like there's a very good chance that's going to happen, I'd take them to win the NFC South. I'd take them to win the South because he would be a clear upgrade over a Desmond Ridder. I mean, he would obviously be a clear upgrade over Ridder and Heinicke. And yeah, I don't think they would win a playoff game with him. I think they would get bounced in the first round, but I do. Yeah, I agree. I think they'd win the division if Cousins went to the Falcons.
Yeah, and imagine they hired Bill Belichick with Kirk Cousins at your quarterback.
I still don't think you would win many play. I think you might win a playoff game. That's it still, if that would have been the case.
Maybe, I could maybe see them going around, especially in the NFC. I could see it.
It's Kirk maybe, Cousins. It's Kirk Cousins. It's Kirk Cousins. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. It's Kirk Cousins. He's not great. He puts up numbers, but in the postseason, he is garbage.
Yeah, he's been bad in the postseason, but hey, maybe Bill Belichick gets the best out of him. You never know. Maybe he comes in with a Josh McDaniels as the OC, and who knows? So, I think Kurt. If he ends up going to Atlanta, I definitely think they are the favorites for NFC South, and with that off, and even though the Bucks won it, and I know they'll probably get Baker back too, but I like that. I think around with that talent, we saw what he did in Minnesota with some really talented wide receivers. I think they can win that division.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And now staying in the NFC South, the Bucks on Monday signed Mike Evans to a 2-year, $52 million deal. And I thought they were going to let him walk. I thought that was the one guy they were going to let walk, but they ended up working out a deal with him. But the big question is does this mean Baker Mayfield is back? And I think it is. I think he had a really good rapport with Mike Evans last year. I think he comes back to Tampa. I think Baker had one of his best seasons of his career last year in Tampa. I think this means that Baker Mayfield is back.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mike Evans returning. Yeah, I think it's big for Baker because he's a first quarterback all time in the NFL to play for eight different coaches in his first 6 years in the league. Like I think if the money's right and the money's kind of close to where he wants it, I would think he wants some stability because he has not really had that since entering the league yet. So I think that would be a huge plus. And, I know we just talked about the Falcons, but even if they bring back Baker, they're still right there to kind of fight for the NFC South. And I could see them getting a wild card just with the Panthers being so bad. The Saints are probably going to be right around where they were this year. We'll see what they do in the next couple of weeks. So, I could see Tampa picking off those two teams and fighting for a wild card spot, bringing back a Baker Mayfield as quarterback.
Yeah, it's going to be close to the top with those three teams. Say Cousins goes to Atlanta, it's going to be close to the top with Atlanta, Tampa, and New Orleans. It's going to be really, really close between those three teams. Those three teams will be interesting. I mean, it was a battle this year, but I think it'll be even because Atlanta's going to be better. Tampa will be around the same if Baker comes back, and then New Orleans will probably be around what they were last year as well. So it'll be a really interesting battle. Probably it did come out of the last week last year, but I think it's going to come down to the last week again if Cousins goes to Atlanta and Baker resigns with the Bucs.
Yeah, absolutely. And when those teams slip up to the Carolina Panthers somehow, yeah, that could easily cost them the division. So yeah, all three of those teams need to go 2-0 against the Panthers. That division definitely is gonna be very competitive next year. We'll see what the Saints do. I don't love Dennis Allen. Like it feels like they've underachieved, under him the first 2 years there. But we'll see what they can do. And yeah, I expect them though to still be right there and shout to win the NFC South.
Oh, you have to. You definitely have to. It's going to be interesting, too, with the Bucs. They got Levante David as a free agent, too. We'll see what happens with him. They just franchised. I think there's a good chance they could end up losing David because they're going to franchise. They already franchised Winfield. They're going to come up with a big long-term deal for Winfield. They signed Evans, and now they're probably going to sign Baker. So I think the odd man out there is Levante David.
Yeah, that's what it seems is going to happen right now. So yeah, unfortunately, but yeah, you mentioned earlier he is up there in age, so maybe somebody you could find, to replace an inside linebacker. I know he's been very valuable, but yeah, you got to kind of make sacrifices somewhere, and it definitely seems like he's the one that seems the most likely one not to return to the team right now.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I think that is the guy that is going to be the guy who's going to be the odd man out. But UConn, even though they've clinched the Big East outright, they do have two tough games this week to try to continue being a number one seed. But before we talk about those two games and the huge game in Cameron Indoor on Saturday, we're going to hear from our friends at JPEG Financial and Shamrock Home Inspections.
Do you have a 401k and some savings for future retirement, but don't even know if it's enough to live off of? How much is enough? How often are you thinking about it? The team at JPEX Financial Group can help set your mind at ease. We specialize in creating strategies in the planning and managing of your financial, educational, and investment needs. We help clients pursue their investment goals with sound financial strategies. You deserve a personal, tailored plan. Lasting, meaningful, and open relationships are the foundation of our practice. You've worked hard for your money and should feel confident in your investment choices as you make decisions for your financial future. Your goals are our goals. We are dedicated to your needs and hopes for your future. Visit our website and give us a call at 860-430-5397. Securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors, Inc. JPEX Financial Group, LLC is not a registered broker-dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services. JPEX Financial Group is located at 78 Eastern Boulevard, Glastonbury, Connecticut.
There's no bigger investment than home ownership. And to make sure the house is up to your standards, you need a professional to look it over. Brian Flanagan from Shamrock Home Inspections is a licensed home inspector and a member of the Connecticut Association of Home Inspectors. Brian was a contractor for over 15 years, so he knows how homes should be constructed and how mechanicals should work.
What makes me a good home inspector was the 20 years that I was a home improvement person, doing all the different repairs that I have done and what other people have done wrong that I had to go out and fix. So I have a pretty quick eye on seeing what's right and what's wrong. Before you move, call Shamrock Home Inspections.
Before you make the biggest investment of your life, call Brian Flanagan from Shamrock Home Inspections at 860-268-2566 or visit shamrockhomeinspectionct.com.
Alrighty, as I said before we went to break, big week. It is. I don't want to say a huge week because they already clinched the Big East, but I still think it's a pretty big week because they have two tough games, and it starts with Marquette tonight. You know, they crushed Marquette and Hartford a couple weeks ago. Now, Marquette's coming to the game shorthanded. Tyler Kolek, he's out. Is Iguodala, is he out too?
I believe he's questionable, but I think he's practiced the last couple of days, so I assume he's going to be back tonight.
So he'll be back tonight, but I think this is going to be even though Kolek's out, it's going to be a tough game for UConn. We know UConn is not as dominant. They're still really good, but they're not as dominant when they go on the road. This is the craziest stat ever about UConn basketball. They have not beaten a ranked team on the road since 2014. That is crazy. That's a crazy stat right there about UConn basketball. I mean, tonight very easily could be the first time because Marquette's without Tyler Kolek. But I think if Newton has a big game and if Klingon has a big game, I think UConn's winning. Klingon had a huge game at the XL Center against them. I think if Klingon has a big game and if Newton has a really big game, and then, you know, if you can just get either Spencer or Kierben. Spencer was one who had that – it was Spencer, right, who had that huge game against Marquette at the XL Center. So Spencer or Kierben step up, or even Castle. Castle had a good game on. That's the thing with this UConn team is – there's so many guys that could beat you. I mean, you have so many guys. This is the best starting five in college basketball. That's why they're the best team in college basketball. I mean, it's just any of these five guys can beat you with the way they're playing. So I think tonight's game is going to be a nice, good road test, kind of a test of what they're going to see. You know, at the Big East tournament or the NCAA tournament. That's why I like this week. I like they're playing tough games this week because it's pretty much going to be out. You know, maybe the 1-8 game they play at the Big East tournament or the 1-16 game they have at the NCAA tournament, it's going to be tough the rest of the way. They're not going to be home. They're not going to be at home anymore. They're done at home. There's no more home games. No more games at Gamble Pavilion. So they're all going to be tough. They're going to be in some tough environments. So I think this is a really good week to get, you know, this to get ready for the tournament for them. And they're still playing for that one seed. They're still playing for one seed because say they lose to Marquette and Providence, there's a chance they could drop. I think this is going to be a competitive game tonight. I think it's going to be a really good game tonight, but eventually I got UConn winning it. I'm going to go 76 to 70. I think UConn wins it by six. I think this is a close game. Shaka's going to have them ready. They're at home, but I think UConn wins it tonight 76-70. Now, if Kolek was playing, I think Marquette would win, but Kolek didn't have a good game against UConn the game in Hartford. I still think they'd win if they had Kolek, but without Kolek, I got to go UConn here.
Yeah, I got UConn as well. I got them 74 to 70. And actually, go back to your point. I think UConn already, I think they've already clinched a one seed for the NCAA tournament. I just think them, Purdue, Houston are just above everybody else.
Yeah, who would be the next team? Because Arizona and Tennessee have six losses, right?
Yeah, Tennessee, I think I have them right. I'd have them as the number one seed. Arizona hasn't beaten a tournament team since December 21st.
I don't get Lenardi has them as like the number one seed for some
I
reason.
I don't know why. I don't like that. I guess they've been in Colorado, but that's it. Like they Washington State, the other tough one in the Pac-12 they haven't beat them. They got swept. So, you know, so I think they're all six. I don't think North Carolina or Duke are getting up there. If North Carolina wins at Duke Saturday and beats them again on next Saturday in the ACC tournament, yeah, I can maybe see North Carolina sneak it, get that four, but I think UConn's locked as long as they don't lose by 30 in each game, which they won't. But yeah, it's for tonight, it's two tough games, you know, Kolek being out, you know, that oblique, hopefully he's back for the tournament, Big East and NCAA tournament. You know, Iguodala, yeah, he's going to be back. You know, Marquette's on the third string point guard now. Because Sean Jones was their backup, but he got hurt midway through. So Cam Jones kind of taken over that role. Iguodaro, if he's back tonight, they can kind of run the offense through him, which will help. But David Joplin's really stepped David Joplin played well Saturday. Cam Jones, since the month of February, since the first game of February, is averaging 22 points a game. He's been awesome. They outscored Marquette did in the paint the other day, 42-38. They're going to get to the basket. Klingon's got to stay out of foul trouble tonight. But Joplin and David and Cam Jones, they're two guys that could shoot. Ben Gold, they're kind of stretch five, or he's a stretch four, but he'll play some five coming off the bench. He's a guy that could pull Klingon away from the basket, which will be tough. But look, Marquette's going to be looking for blood for what UConn did to him. A couple weeks ago, Shaka's had that thing written on the calendar. But I do think UConn on the road without Kolick, I think they find a way. And you mentioned UConn starting five. I believe they're the only team in the country that all five starters average double digits. Yeah. Like, that's not something you ever see in college basketball.
No.
It's a rare thing. So, this group's been awesome this year. And, again, there's some other candidates that I wouldn't be surprised when coach of the year, but I think Hurley's got to get it. They were picked during the Big East. They lost three of their top players, and they're right there as the best team right now in college basketball. So Hurley's done an outstanding job, and he's got to win coach of the year.
And a big reason why is the improvements of even Newton's elevated to one of the best players in college basketball. Klingon is improved this year. I mean, Cam Spencer's got, and the way he's recruited, Cam Spencer's gotten the job done. Cam Spencer's done a really good job. He's gotten the job done. I mean, Castle's been up and down, but the way he's recruited, the improvement of players, I think so. I think he definitely should be coach of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I know Lamont Paris is going to get a vote or get a couple votes at South Carolina. He's done an outstanding job. Josh Schertz at Indiana State might get a couple, but yeah, I'm trying to. There's a couple others that I think are going to be up there, but yeah, I think Hurley's, he's got to, I think he's the favorite to win it, and he's done an outstanding job. And what, they're 42-4 now in the last 46. Like, that just doesn't happen if you're, that's even tougher than Kansas in the Dukes of the world to even hit a mark like that. So yeah, it's been really impressive. And hopefully they can kind of continue that tonight. And you mentioned, first time in a decade, they've lost 21 straight on the road to a top 25 team. So, hopefully they can finally get that off their back and, accomplish that tonight. That would be nice.
Yeah, I think they do it. I think they finally get that monkey off their back, and I think they finally get a win on the road against a top 25 team. I think they do. They do that tonight. But UConn has another big road game, a rivalry game on Saturday night as UConn goes to the Dunk. And I know you guys are going to, listeners are going to correct me, but come on, I'm always going to call it the Dunk. I'm always going to call that place the Dunk in Providence, and that place is going to be loud. That place is going to be senior night. That place is going to be loud on Saturday night. This is going to be a tough game. Providence played them tough out in stores. This is going to be a tough game out in Providence on Saturday night. And I think, the big reason, I think other guys are going to step up for Providence. I think Ticket Gaines or Pierre. I think Gaines or Pierre are going to step up. I think Odoro will have a pretty good game. Same with Devin Carter. But I do think I think Newton's going to play well. I think they're going to shoot the ball better from three. They didn't shoot the ball well from three against Providence the first time. I think they shoot the ball better from three this time. I think Newton has a good game. I think Newton and Klingon play well. And I think UConn pulls this one out again. I think it's going to be really close. It's going to come down to the wire. That atmosphere is good. I know the students are on spring break, so it won't be as wild. But the Dunk is always wild. That's always a wild atmosphere. It's going to be – they're going to want to beat UConn. You know that. They're right on the bubble. Providence is right on the bubble. And this is a win that could very, very easily get the win. Because if Providence loses this game, I think it's going to be hard because they're probably going to fall to like the 6 or 7 seed in the tournament. And the only win they could end up getting after that is they could set up a matchup, which would be crazy, which would be really entertaining on Wednesday night. It could set up a matchup with Georgetown with Ed Cool, even though last night wasn't anywhere near as hostile as the one in January. That could set up a matchup at the Garden with Ed Cooley. That'll be interesting. But yeah, Providence needs this game. Providence needs this game to get a better Big East matchup and to keep their tournament hopes alive. So it's going to be a wild atmosphere at the Dunk on Saturday night, but I do think UConn pulls out a close one.
Yeah, I think UConn does pull it out on the road. Providence, it's actually Saturday night is going to be the front end of their spring break.
There'll be students there.
There will. So I guess they're keeping the campus open to Sunday. But the thing is, like, this schedule doesn't come out to September. So how many students already canceled, already booked their spring break trip. So I think it's going to be loud in there. It definitely will. But yeah, it's a must-win game for Providence. And you mentioned last night, Georgetown Cooley had the chance to do the funniest thing and then their at-large bid last night, Providence's, but failed to do that. That was all Providence fans last night there.
I know. I was hearing at the end of the game, they were chanting, "Let's go Friars" at Georgetown. Yeah. I mean, let me tell you something about Ed Cooley. I know Georgetown is a good program historically. This, to me, it wasn't even a lateral move. I hate to say it. I think it's a step down with how bad Georgetown is.
We'll see. He's going to get NIL money this summer. So next year is a big year for him. That right now it seems like it's bad. I don't think he thought it would be this bad, but this summer is going to be the big test for him. He needs a big year too, because they're supposed to get Cam Spencer. Did not UConn outbid, is kind of the rumor there. So, there's Hunter Dickinson, Maryland guy, wanted to play for Georgetown. Kansas spent more money. So they had those two guys be a much different story for Georgetown right now.
Absolutely.
So, we'll see what Georgetown could get for NIL funds this offseason. For Providence, Carter at 20 the first time, but I thought, Castle guarded him really well. He's going to hit his tough shots. If you could stop him and Josh Aduro, you're in pretty good shape. Tate Gaines has been up and down. JD Pierre is kind of, he's not a great scorer. He had 8 last night, he'll hit a couple shots. Corey Floyd, the UConn transfer, I could see him. He's had a rough year, but I could see him going for 10-15 against UConn. That really seems what's happened. And Garway Duall, he's been really good defensively. He's made some bad plays, some bad fouls at times, but he's kind of been a streaky scorer. They're very high on him in the offseason, but the offense just hasn't came around yet. But he's capable of putting up some points. So if you could shut those two down, in the Darren Carter, you're feeling pretty good about yourself. If Corey Floyd to take a game, did they go off for 20 on you? It's kind of one of those things where you go, all right, let them have it, go congratulate them. But and you mentioned Providence too, kind of that they went out of their end. There's only been one Big East team in the history that got 20 wins that did not make the NCAA tournament. That was John Beilein's team, West Virginia team in 2006-07. So if you get 20 wins in the Big East, you're usually feeling pretty good about yourself getting in. So they get that Saturday. They definitely punch their ticket.
Yeah, I thought that you were going to say Syracuse. Syracuse in 2007 was close too, right?
Would they have 19?
I think they might have 19 wins that year.
I think they had 19.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was another one that definitely could have been definitely another close one there. But the 20 wins has kind of been the benchmark for teams to get in the Big East. So the ACC kind of their Wake Forest bubble burst last night, which helps the conference. So all these teams, 4 through 9 are kind of fighting to get bids here. So it'll be tough, but going in there to dunk, tough place to win, but I do think they get the job done.
And the thing is, it's going to be a tough game, obviously a tough game Saturday night, but you talk about the Big East. Yeah, really four through seven though, or five. I think Xavier and Butler are out. You think Xavier and Butler are out? Because definitely St. John's.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
St. John's, Providence, Seton Hall, Villanova. All the old school, all the old school big teams are going to be fighting for spots in the Big East tournament. That's what's going to make it fun next week. All these old school Big East teams are going to be fighting for spots in the tournament. Now, Villanova looks good, but they got a big game tonight with Seton Hall. So they're all fighting. All those teams are fighting. And they're all, teams that are not nowhere near as good as UConn, not on Marquette or Creighton's level. They're on that third tier, pretty much just fighting to get all those teams are just fighting to get into the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. Butler's probably done, and Xavier, they probably got to win out, win the tournament, or get to the championship game. So, they're in the 8-9. So, if they knock off UConn on a Thursday afternoon, would be huge. That definitely helped them. But I think Seton Hall tonight, that I think if either whoever wins, I think punches their ticket. Nova's got one of the weirdest resumes because they lost to all the Big Five schools up in Philly, or Big Six now. Like, that's going to hurt, but, like, they beat North Carolina in a neutral. Memphis is who's starting to get it back going. They beat them on a neutral. They went to Creighton and won. Like,
yeah, it's a weird, they got weird one team. Of the, Very it, up and down basketball team Villanova's been this year. Yeah, they lost twice to St. John's, but then they crushed Providence and Villanova at home. So, very weird, very weird year for Villanova.
Yeah.
And then, and then St. John's, after Patino's comments, they took off.
Yeah. Yeah, they have. They absolutely poor DePaul just, you know, wrecked them last night. They got Georgetown Saturday. So they, you know, doesn't help their resume, but like if they can get one, they're in the 4-5. Like them Seton Hall could play Thursday afternoon.
I think so. I think there's a good chance it's them and Seton Hall.
Yeah. If Marquette loses tonight and they lose to Xavier on Saturday, and St. John's, I think, wins and Seton Hall wins out too, or loses one, I think Marquette moves down to the four.
Oh, wow.
So there is still a chance that Marquette could play that four spot, but I think they should be okay. But yeah, you know, St. John's too, they're starting to play better. But yeah, you know, like Big East tournament's going to be fun because St. John's, all those teams kind of bunched up, Seton Hall, Nova, Providence, like those are going to be huge. And the last thing St. John's is too, don't forget, like the committee with the net rating and all that, they count those Big East tournament games at home for St. John's as their home court. They don't get neutral for it.
Yeah, so. But do you think with the whole story and Patino that they're going to kind of want to just put them in?
Yeah.
Because they want to put Patino into the tournament with the whole story of Patino calling out his team and them getting hot.
Yeah. It's going to be very tough for the committee to leave out of Rick Pitino. And his son's team down in New Mexico is starting to fall off. I think they would love a ratings palooza, New Mexico, St. John's, and the first one, Dayton.
That'd be a nice one.
Yeah. So I think if the committee gets that opportunity, I do not think they will pass that up. So I wouldn't be shocked there. So, So again, like, you know, could get up to six Big East teams. I don't think we're going to see that. I think we probably get four or five right now. I think five is probably the most likely outcome, but hopefully we get to six. But, you know, it depends on what happens. If there's some bid seals out there, which very possibly could be this year. So if that happens, you could go down to maybe, you're probably getting like five.
Yeah, it's really between like, four to six teams in the Big East. We'll see what happens. That's why next week's so interesting with Big East tournament. We'll definitely be talking about that a ton. But we got to get to the huge game on Saturday night between Duke and North Carolina, a rematch of a game that was played in the first week of February that North Carolina won. I think this is going to be close and competitive again. North Carolina clinched at least a share of the title. Duke's trying to get a share of the title, so I think this is going to be a really close competitive game. And I think Duke wins it. And I think it's going to be because the bench and the three-point shooting, the bench for Duke will be better because I think the scoring will all be pretty even for the starters. I think RJ Davis will have a big game. I think Baycott will have a big game. I think Harrison Ingram will have a big game. And then I think on the Duke side, I think McCain, Roach, and Filipowski will have a big game. So I think that's even. I think the bench will make the difference. And that's why I think Duke gets a share of the ACC title. And I think they split with North Carolina this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I got the Tar Heels on this one. I mean, I got the Duke Blue Devils on this one. It's tough to – I think, these teams usually don't sweep each other. You know, usually feels like it's a sweep or it's a split. I think for Duke, they got to do a much better job of stopping Baycott down low. He had one of his better games. He had 25 and 10 in the first meeting. And DJ Burns, the NC State big guy, had 27 against the other night. Like, they've really struggled – defending in the paint because they don't really. Ryan Young is their kind of five. Mitchell, they've kind of been, or Stewart's doesn't really play a ton. He's their other kind of big guy, but because Phil Powell's a four, and we gotta congratulate for what happened last week. Looked like he had to amputate his leg, and for him to come back last week and throwing out windmills,
I know you're being sarcastic.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And throwing out windmills like he was Saturday, great comeback.
That's why you are pro court storming.
Yeah. 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 He was fine. A little too dramatic there.
Duke made a very big deal out of that. John Shire made it clear he didn't want any court storming.
No, of course not. Because, you know, Duke's never going to court storm. You know, they're Duke, you know. So they probably would have got court stormed NC State beat them the other night. You know, what's going to happen? So that's what happens to your Duke. But so, again, RJ Davis could carry them on their back. But I just think at home, Duke finds a way to get a share of it. I still don't love Duke. I've talked about it all year. You know, I know their defensive numbers are getting better, but I don't think some of it is they're guarding a little bit better, but I think some of it still is the competition in the ACC is not great. So, you know, just like last year, they're starting to play really well, but we saw what happened right when they played Tennessee last year. So I got North Carolina. I mean, I got Duke winning this one in a close one at Cameron.
Now, we got Duke winning this game, but the big question is which team is going to go farther? And we could very easily see a rematch in the ACC tournament, but I think the big question is which team do you have more confidence making a run in the NCAA tournament? I think we answered this question when they played earlier, and I think I picked Duke, but I'm going to change now. I'm going to say North Carolina. I'm going to say North Carolina because of RJ Davis. RJ Davis is one of the best players in college basketball. Duke does not have an RJ Davis on their team. They got a good team. They don't have an RJ Davis on their team. I'm not the biggest Hubert Davis fan. I'm not a huge John Shire. He's done a pretty good job, but not obviously he's not what was previously there. So I'm going to go with RJ Davis. I think that's why I think Carolina can make a run. And RJ Davis and Armando Bacot were on the team that made a run to the national championship game in 2022. So I'm going to say North Carolina.
Yeah, I'm with you. I got North Carolina as well. I think RJ Davis is good enough to put a team on his back for six straight games and go win a championship. They got it. You know, I think defensively they're still not great, but I still think they're getting a little bit better as well. Again, last night, the way Notre Dame started to play, I'm like, you know, that could have been a real trap game for the Tar Heels, but they crushed Notre Dame last night.
Notre Dame was playing better. I thought they were terrible. And look at the score last night. It proved it kind of. I thought they were terrible. They actually were playing better, Notre Dame.
They've won going into last night. They won 5 out of 6. And they got Clemson and Wake. Strudberry's a good coach. They got a really good bat. If that backcourt, well, it's one of his kids' son is a freshman in Burton. They're gonna be pretty good next year, I think. Notre Dame, they got a pretty good backcourt coming back. They're young, so I like the way they're playing. So Strudberry's done a nice job. You know, that team's definitely getting better. But you know, again, Duke last year, you remember they were playing well down the stretch last year, and every recency bias last year going to the tournament. Oh, this Duke team's peaking
They won the ACC last year.
Yeah, they
did. They won the ACC, and then they lost to Tennessee in the second round.
Yep, that's because Tennessee bullied them, and Duke is soft, and that's kind of what I've said multiple times this year. That's what they are. Remember what Yusuf Plagic did the flip? Flip just lied down and wanted no part of them. Yep, none. Yep, yep. If they get a Tennessee in the second round, same thing's going to happen. You know, and I think whoever wins the ACC, Duke or North Carolina, is getting the 2 seed in the East. So if that happens, I don't think either is beating UConn. I just don't. I feel pretty good about UConn going into either game, but I like North Carolina more. I just don't trust this Duke team. Them in North Carolina, I mean, them Kentucky, like both those teams have like 6-7 guys drafted, but I don't trust either team. I just don't, like, you know, so they got one of the best, they got some of the most talent in the country, but I just don't trust Duke, and I'll take North Carolina. They are older. They got seniors, you know, in Bacot, Davis. Ingram's been around, so I will take the Tar Heels. I trust them a little bit more than I do Duke Blue Devils.
I just think just because of RJ Davis. Really, RJ Davis is a difference maker, and their experience, some of their guys' experience, like Bacot and Davis, making a run to the national title game. Because Filipowski, I think Roach might have been on the team in 2022 when Duke made the Final Four, but Filipowski wasn't on the team. McCain wasn't on the team. So I think Carolina is more experienced to make a run. Even though I'm not the biggest Hubert Davis fan, I think Carolina has a better chance to make a run. But we're going to wrap the show talking about Caitlin Clark breaking Pete Maravich's record, and she is now the all-time scorer in college basketball. It's an amazing career for Caitlin Clark. And the big question is she the greatest women's basketball player of all time? And I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes. Because if you look at some of the great women's basketball players, you know Maya Moore, Breonna Stewart, Diana Taurasi. I mean, all of them played for one of the greatest coaches ever in Gino Auriemma. Candace Parker, Shaniqua Holzclaw, played for one of the greatest coaches ever in Pat Summitt. Asia Wilson with South Carolina, Cheryl Miller. Maybe Cheryl Miller has a point for USC, but I think it's Caitlin Clark. Because did you ever hear of Iowa women's basketball before Caitlin Clark?
No, I never. No,
that's the thing. I don't think they're ever good. The thing. That's why I'm saying she's the greatest woman. I don't even think she needs to win a championship, and she is the greatest women's basketball player of all time because the way she look at the ratings. Look at the ratings for the game on Sunday. Look at the crowd she's bringing in. I don't think we've ever seen a women's basketball player get followed the way Caitlin Clark is. She's so impactful. She's been so impactful to the game. That's why I'm saying she is the greatest women's basketball player of all time.
Yeah, she actually has. Because if you watch 5 minutes of Iowa basketball, you could see there's not much talent around her. Like, it is her and nobody else.
Yes.
You know, we'll see what happens next year without her. But I actually took Diana Taurasi. I just think, and I know... Yes, Taurasi, she won 3 titles at UConn. She had a great team around her. But, even at her age, 41 or 42 still, she's still putting up 16 points a game in WNBA. She's won, she won 3 WNBA titles. She's won 5 Olympic gold medals. She's been one of the best offensive players forever in that sport. And could I see Caitlin Clark one day surpassing her? Absolutely.
Oh, she wins the national title. She's the best. There's no question. If they win the national title this year, she is the greatest ever.
I want to see what the NBA career looks like before, because I think Taurasi's on pole.
No, I'm just saying women's college basketball player. If she wins a national title, she's definitely the best. No question.
Yeah, if she wins a title with that Iowa team, sure. Yeah, I'll agree with you there. She took down
an undefeated South Carolina team last year. An undefeated South Carolina team last year.
She did. This year will be even tougher because South Carolina's got shooters like they did not have last year. So this South Carolina team be a tall ass. If she can do it for Iowa, she's definitely brought ratings. She's been great for the sport. They had almost 4 million, I think, the other day when when she broke the record. So yeah, she's been awesome. And the ratings for the Final Four, if they get there, will be unbelievable ratings. They had 10, I think, last year. If she wins a title with this Iowa team, which would be very impressive, absolutely, because there's not much talent around her. That Iowa team, I don't remember really them being ever in the NCAA tournament before she got there. So, yeah, the way she's impacted the sport, it's been unbelievable for women's college basketball.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. So that's going to wrap it up this week on Sports Talk with RNJ. For Justin D'Onofrio, I'm Steve Risser. We will be back next week. We have a couple shows next week. First, we'll be talking about free agency in the NFL, and we'll be talking about the conference tournaments in college basketball. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Jones on first down, wide open, it's Barkley, and Saquon Barkley will take it into the end zone.
Your best ability is his availability. Saquon Barkley, he's great when he's on the field, but the problem is, since 2018, he hasn't been healthy for this team.
Look at this. They lob it to him. He taps it in off the glass. How about that?
Porter Moser, I think right now, is the best coach of college basketball, hands down.
Fitz, 2 for 3. He's done his part.
Fitz is drilled to deep right field toward the pole, and it is gone.
They don't mind not being what they were in the 90s as the best organization in baseball, because the Yankees are not. They're even close to the best organization in baseball.
They're trying to be the Rays, and the Rays do this for a reason. Like, you're the Yankees.
Hello, my name is Joe Aguirre. I'm the president of Clovercrest Media Group. And here at CMG, we have a wide variety of podcasts, including sports shows like Keys to the City, The Roll Call, Throwing Jabs, All Four Downs, and Jawing About the G-Men. And great true crime shows like Sticky Meek, Crimes and Consequences, Ivy League Murders, and Bird, The Unsolved Murder of David Eichmann. You can find all these podcasts and so much more by visiting clovercrestmedia.com.